Welcome to Cold Email with Basha and Olive. You gotta believe, success is never giving up and other lessons learned from watching baseball.
Welcome to Cold Email.
We're here and we're talking about believing in yourself today.
We literally are. It's the 10th episode, which is big.
Wow. Oh my god.
Yeah, I kind of didn't believe... I didn't believe we would get
here.
Yeah,
I was like, remember when we started, we were like, oh, maybe we'll just do like a short 10 episode run. That'll be it. Like, we'll see where it goes. And now we're like, oh, we got plans.
I know. I guess that's the testament to believing in yourself. Oh, wait. We have to say the episode name.
Do you want to do it or do you want me to? I feel like this one is yours.
Okay, I'm going to take a lot of this one in the beginning. It'll be equal in the end. Don't worry. Okay. Episode 10, You Gotta Believe, Success is Never Giving Up, and Other Lessons Learned from Watching Baseball. But it's not going to be, like, inaccessibly about baseball.
This is not a sports podcast. This has not become a sports podcast.
Much to my dismay. Just kidding. I do listen to sports podcasts sometimes if there's, like, something I want to find out about drama that, like... I don't know. Like, there's some drama that's hard to find online, or they just recap it so well. Like, there's this guy who kept getting kicked out of Citi Field, the Mets stadium, and it was like hashtag free Jerron, and they were like, it was good. But I listened to like a Barstool Sports podcast for that. It sucked. I like skipped through. You know that like go forward 30 seconds thing?
Yes.
I did that for 40 minutes. Like, I would listen
to... Oh, yeah, sometimes I do that, and I'm like, okay, this is a lot right now.
It's hard to figure out, like, where your content is. Like, there's, like, oh, there's topics. They should tell you where the topics are. Maybe we should tell them where the topics are. It's fine. Anyways, it's not going to be inaccessibly about baseball, so don't be turned off by that. Please, I beg of you.
No, if you're not listeners... Even I, who does not know much about baseball at all, knows what's going on in this. I, who just as we are recording this, went to my first ever baseball game yesterday.
Indeed. Okay.
Yes,
are we ready?
Kick this one off.
I'm just gonna go.
Starting pitch.
Here we go. Yes, first pitch by me, much like the other pitches. For now, will be by me. Okay, here we go. Baseball. So in this episode, we're going to be talking about success. And I thought an apt metaphor was baseball. This episode, like many episodes, is based on a series of texts I sent to Olive when I was freaking out.
True.
Okay, so I said, based on our conversation yesterday and the confluence of many recent realizations and revelations, I am trying this new thing called believing in yourself. ... Pretty crazy. Next text. Whoa, podcast episode idea that hit me like a ton of bricks after I sent that. An episode called You Gotta Believe, in which we somehow connect the Mets and believing in yourself. I have no idea if this makes sense. And I didn't, but now we're here. And so... I made it make sense.
I don't remember what I said, but I was probably like, yeah, you're good. This is a good one. Write that down.
I think you were like, I don't know.
Oh, really?
You were like, it's maybe. Like, if you can figure it out. Yeah, I was like, oh my god, dissolve the
Yes,
me.
I do.
But it's okay. Sometimes you have to follow your own dreams.
I do believe.
I know you
Sometimes
do.
Sometimes I'm just like,
shout out, I believe in you too.
Let's see where this goes.
You gotta believe.
You gotta.
Okay, so success. Success is non-linear, okay?
Indeed.
And, yeah, I mean, come on. But, like, because it never feels like you're, like, going from A to B in success. Like, you're not like, oh, I walked up a step, now I'm at the next tier. It's just, like, you're everywhere.
Yeah.
You're, like, on a scatter graph.
You're kind of, like, going down, like, a river. It's just, like, point A to point B, and you're going around different things, and sometimes you can see ahead, and sometimes you can't, and... Yeah.
A winding river.
Every
but then
day
you get
is
there.
A winding road, I think Sheryl Crow sings.
Oh my god, is that... I didn't know that was Sheryl Crow.
I thought that was Sheryl Crow.
It's nice, Olive. It probably is. We'll fact check that.
Yes.
So success is nonlinear. We agree on that. Every day is a winding road, Sheryl Crow. But I think also the secret that isn't really a secret, but kind of is, because you kind of forget about it until you're like, wait, why didn't anyone tell me that? But they've told you that a million times. Anyways, the secret is success is the result of persistence in, like, the weirdest and hardest moments. Do you agree?
Yes. Yes. Be undeniable.
Be undeniable. But in case you didn't agree, I brought some examples to the table. And they're baseball, but don't worry, I'll make it cool. Okay. So the words, you gotta believe, is, it's like a Mets rallying cry. And so I'm going to read some excerpts of an article called Mets Summer of 73, The Birth of You Gotta Believe by John Delcos of MetsMesmerized.com. On Twitter, I think is MetsMerized.
I love that. I thought that's what the website was at first. I was like, that's hilarious. MetsMerized. Oh, it is. It does say MetsMerized in the document. MetsMerized.com.
Okay,
that's so
error
sick.
Right there. Thanks, MetsMerized, for this info. Okay, so You Gotta Believe, according to MetsMerized.com, comes out of the 1973 team, which was a talented team with a bunch of people who I'm not going to say.
Rusty, stop. These names are fun.
It's a good one. There's a lot of really good names in baseball, but I'll go on. I digress. The 1973 team was good, and they were doing well. In late April, they were in first place, and then a million of them got injured. That sucked. And then they sucked super bad. Mets chairman of the board, M. Donald Grant, just really wanted to say that. I could have said
really,
a guy.
It's like a name of a guy who would be a chairman of the board.
But anyways, this guy, chairman of the board, addresses the team. And it's like, don't quit. Like, he's trying to give, like, a pep talk. Maybe it's, like, going kind of lame. And then famous pitcher, Tug McGraw.
That's a good name, too. Oh, my God.
I know. He stands up and just yells, that's right. We can do it. You gotta believe. And then they went on after that talk to win 24 out of 35 games and moved back into first place
Damn.
By September.
Wow.
I know, because they believe.
You gotta believe.
You gotta believe. And it's, yeah, I think that's like how you gotta live.
Yeah. Even when you're down however many baseball terms, you gotta get the team back together.
You gotta believe.
You gotta believe.
Yeah. I also just want to note that they won 24 of the 35 games, which is good, but that means they lost 6, 5, 11. Okay, I can do it. The math. but they, like, that's, like, a good record, and they got to first, but they still lost 11
yeah.
games.
You gotta lose some to win some.
Right. It's never just gonna be, like, walking
no.
upstairs. Like, it's not like, I got to this stair, now the next stair, now
yeah.
the next stair.
It's like they started off the season at number one, but then they fell down, you know.
Yeah.
You gotta lose to win sometimes.
Gotta spend money to make money. Something Julian Glander once told us.
You do.
We'll get to that later. Okay, the next Never Giving Up happened recently. It's a clip I saw. Okay, so the Mets this year, similar to the 73 Mets of the last story, everyone got, like, super, super injured.
Oh, jeez.
So they're calling up guys left and right from the minor leagues, and it's just, like, randos playing, like, just, like, dudes you never heard of, which you can do, like, if there are people injured, if you have a spot on your roster, you can call up someone from the minor leagues, make a trade, whatever. So everyone's injured. There's so many random dudes. This is where Tommy Hunter comes in. He's been playing in the major leagues since 2007. He was the fourth youngest player in the American League at 22, so it's like, ooh, whoa, that's crazy. Then he's, like, traded a million times to the Baltimore Orioles, the Cubs. He gets injured a lot, has a lot of surgeries, is, like, sucks sometimes and is released from his contract. So in, like, a weird set of circumstances, Tommy Hunter signs with the Mets, opts out of his contract, so that's like void, and then re-signs again. There are two leagues in baseball, the American League and the National League, and the National League doesn't, like, the pitchers have to, like, have at-bats, like, they have to hit, and in the American League, they don't. You get someone to do that for you. So just by chance, he's on a team in the National League, and he has to hit, and he has not hit ever. Yeah, it's been like...
Oh, wow. Like, he didn't even go up to bat.
No, like, he did once. Go up to bat, oh, okay. But he never, like, advanced to first base.
Aw.
Yeah, it was always, like, a strikeout, someone caught it.
Except I did that on purpose in gym class, though.
Oh, well.
I did that on purpose.
Oh, my gosh.
So much so that the gym teacher would be like, we'll try it one more time to let you... I'm like, no, dude, I was throwing it.
Oh, no.
I'm like, you're trying to, like, give me another chance and, like, explain this, but I don't know what they're talking about. I'm like, I want to go sit down and not play this right now.
But, yeah, roll the clip.
Throughout your career, how much have you wanted to bat?
Every day. I try to hit BP. I mean, I needed this. I needed this.
It needed it in what sense?
I don't know. To fulfillment? I don't know. Like, I'm a real baseball player. I mean, I don't have a clue. It's just like, I don't even think my son thinks I'm a real baseball player because I don't get to hit, right? And every little kid wants, you know, and he got to see it tonight. I mean, it's just, my wife took a video of it. And I mean, it was cool, man. My agent was in the stands. I mean, I've got family that was in the stands tonight. You know, it was pretty cool.
How old is your son?
He's 5. He gets it though.
He's in awe. He's like, my wife took a video. My kid's proud of me. Yeah, I think it also, like, aside from believing in yourself, I think it brings about a good point of measures of success, you know? Like, some baseball players are like, oh my god, like, I had a bad season, you know, but they're still, like, making hits and stuff, and, like, this guy is just, like, everybody's at their own journey in their careers, hobbies, whatever. So I think it's a good lesson for measures of success, too. Especially with the interview being, like, oh, like, how much did you want to bet? Like, oh, and he's like, I needed it. But in one sense, it's like, well, he's never bet before. Like, everybody measures success differently.
Right. It's funny because you're like, oh, these baseball players are paid. Oh, shit, I'm not even with the pop filter. Hang on. There's a lot of, like, interesting tie-ins between sports and masculinity, which is the understatement of the century, I think.
Yes.
It's just, like, you think of these guys as, like, they're very, like, physically fit and strong, and, like, they have to be super tough and super manly, but this dude's like, I can't believe I just did that. Like,
was he crying in the video too? Like, at the very least, he was, like, extremely exasperated. He wasn't like, you know, oh yeah, I hit for the first time. He was like, I can't believe it, you know?
I mean, I thought that video was crazy because it was just, like, it was, like, straight up honesty from, like, people who usually are told to not be, like, so transparent.
They really, like, put up a front. Yeah.
So I thought that was beautiful how Tommy Hunter let us into his brain, and his honesty was refreshing. Yeah. And, like, I think we've all felt that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm just happy. Like, congrats to Tommy Hunter.
Congrats to him. He did it.
That was his first recorded major league hit. And now he's hurt again. Okay, shocker, whatever. But, like...
That's sports.
Yeah, yes. It is. And he, like, he got his first major league hit. That's insane. After so many years. And that's because he never stopped trying to. Because if he'd given up and just tried to do what Olive did, which was fake swing the bat, phone it in. No offense, Olive.
I hated gym class. I had
that's no... That's okay. Who didn't? Okay, anyways, back to this. Shout out to Tommy Hunter, who kept You Gotta Believe In. Another example is Aroldis Chapman.
I think that's another good name.
Right? Well, he sucks. He's not a good guy.
Oh,
but
well.
Yeah, I'm just telling this story. Like, I'm not, like, rooting for the guy.
That's also baseball. Yeah.
I know. It's rough. But he's on the Yankees. He was a superstar pitcher, and he's sucking super bad now. Like, he was so much a superstar that he has the fastest recorded pitch speed in MLB history at 105.1 miles an hour. I know. So I'm not crying for the guy. Not a good guy. But the point of the story is not him. It's actually surprisingly what A-Rod said on ESPN when he commented on Chapman's pitching journey. Here is the clip.
Buster, I'll tell you what, you know, when I struggled here in New York, and there was plenty, the captain, Derek Jeter, would always come, give me my glove in between innings after I popped out or struck out or whatever, and he said, keep swinging it, big boy, keep swinging it, it will turn around. Shooters shoot, hitters hit, and closers you have to throw, and that's how you get out of it.
Ball and two strikes to Lindor.
I can't believe he said keep swinging it, big boy. But whatever. And I was like, damn, A-Rod.
Yeah.
That was actually...
See, I don't, like, know exactly what those things... But I get, like, the idea is that everybody has, like, a place on the team. And you do what you do, and you do it.
Yeah. Let me break it down for you. Just because that's the right thing to do. Shoot or shoot in basketball. A lot of times they miss it. Sometimes they get on cold streaks. Just like hitters in baseball, who sometimes get on cold streaks, and closers who are supposed to end a game in baseball and, like, keep the winning team winning. Sometimes they blow it, but the way to fix it is to just keep doing it.
Yeah.
And sometimes that means, like, sucking a lot while you do it for a couple weeks.
It's true.
Yeah. So that's about perseverance. And one final story about perseverance. Brett Phillips' game for a hero. Brett Phillips, like Tommy Hunter, is like mostly a minor league guy from 2012 to 2020. Randomly, he's drafted to a team that ends up going to the World Series that year. Brett Phillips is drafted to the Rays. So when a team is losing badly, they will randomly put in their bench warmers because they're like, we're losing anyway. Like, let's just see what happens. So just in like a weird twist of fate, Brett Phillips finds himself... It's the end of the game, the ninth inning, there's two strikes, and he hits this crazy walk-off run.
And the Rays are going to ask for the biggest hit in the life of Brett Phillips. Traded to Tampa Bay from Kansas City. Hit under 200 with both organizations this year, hit two home runs. Phillips got a fight now. Two strikes.
Jansen. That is into center field. Here comes Kiermaier. Phillips has tied the game. A Rose Arena coming around. Throw home. Now he stumbles. But the ball gets away. Tampa Bay wins it. Brett Phillips, game four hero.
First of all, I love that video because I love Brett Phillips, because he is such, like, a passionate and random guy. Like, he's just, like, the randomest player, but he doesn't care that he's been, like, a minor leaguer for 8 years. He's just, like, he rolls up and, like...
There. He's happy to be there.
Yeah. No, like, that's someone who's enjoying the journey.
I feel like that also connects to art in a lot of ways, too, because, like... Something a professor at Pratt of mine used to say is, like, you know, we would be getting towards the end of the semester and everybody's kind of, like, grudging along, like, almost in the home stretch, but not really. She's like, guys, you're doing art. Like, you're animating things. You're making video games and paintings. Like, it's fun. Like, try to remember that. Yeah, like, try to remember it's fun. And, like, that's what he's doing with baseball. It's like, people are like, oh, it's so serious, blah, 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 but... You're playing a game. It's fun. Yeah.
100%. It's like you're living the dream.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that when you're living the dream, you're every time you like suffer a professional setback or something of the ilk, it hurts way more because it's totally straight up in conflict with your dream.
Yeah, and it's hard to separate sometimes the dream as an occupation versus the dream as something that's personal to you. So, you know, when you fail, it feels personal sometimes.
Right, or like a no email.
Yeah.
Oh, something I wanted to say about, like, when you're living the dream and, like, sometimes, like, some bad stuff happens and you're like, oh my god, dream ruined.
Yeah. It's like, is this the dream anymore? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, when it's just a dream, nothing can hurt it. But when it's reality, there's so much that can hurt it.
Yeah.
And then it becomes, like, I mean, I think there are also certain things about it that become a job. I can't speak to playing baseball professionally, but, like,
I would imagine it's, you know, similar enough.
Yeah. But every day, emails, contracts, invoicing, finding clients.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that go into it that are hard and suck that you need to do to be able to live the dream, which is why so many of my professors are like, get an agent. Because you're gonna hate making invoices and sending emails and getting clients. But also you have to do that before you get an agent.
Yeah. Oh, and I also just want to say this did not win the World Series. It won a game of the World Series. It's complicated. I'm gonna leave it out. You can look into it. But the point is, sometimes the opportunities come at weird times and like weird ways, and you have to be ready for them.
Yes. Yeah, you never know where it's coming or when it's coming. Just be ready.
Persistence.
Because persistence also gets you there. Like, even if it is kind of like a random chance thing, it's like, still wouldn't have gotten there if you didn't try, if you didn't keep going.
Yeah, it's true. You might not have been traded
if
you weren't persistent, or you wouldn't have gotten to the major leagues.
Yeah, like, can you imagine if he had quit, like, you know, a month before he had gotten traded to that team? Like, he would have just, it would have never happened. But he said, you know what, sure, trade me to this other team. That's cool. I'll do it.
I'm gonna try my best, and whatever happens, happens. I'm gonna try my best.
Yeah.
And one more, like, tip to finding success would be doing your own thing and just keep doing it.
As those old lady Facebook posts say, like, there's nobody, or you're the only you, or things like that.
Oh, that's good.
It's like, it's true, though. If you think about it, you are the only you. So you're the only one who could do your thing. So you've already found your niche. By doing your own thing, just keep doing it.
And if you haven't, that's fine.
Yeah, and if you haven't, you will.
Just keep doing stuff you like, yeah.
Yeah, because that's how you carve it out, is by doing things you like.
Yeah. That actually reminds me, I was in Philly last weekend, and I was looking at a Cezanne painting, and it was like a mountain scene. And the tree, like, everything was just blocked out. It was, like, an early Cezanne.
Oh, the Mont Saint-Victoire. One of those MS.
Yes,
that's the one
was
I wrote yesterday.
One of those.
Yeah, he loved those.
Yes, Olive,
loved
you would know.
Mont Saint-Victoire.
Shout out. Yeah, but I was just looking at that, and I was just like, wow. Like, you see the world like this, and no one else did.
Yeah.
And everyone else probably thought, you were, like, a freak, and you did it, and now you're in the Philly Art Museum.
Yeah.
But more importantly, basically every, like, you changed art completely,
yeah.
And that never,
like,
would have happened without you doing your thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good painting.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Oh, you know who's the king of doing your own thing and then successful follow?
Who?
Oh, you know who.
Oh, the person we're about to interview, Julian Glander?
You might say. So, I'm really excited to talk to Julian Glander.
Same.
But first, let's do ads, our sponsorships.
Yes.
Our sponsor of the week is, take it away, Olive.
Farrah Cafe.
Farrah.
Shouts for sponsoring us this week.
Yes, thank you so much, Farah. Farah is a really incredible graphic designer. Her work, her senior thesis with Valentina Vergara, which was called Led by Example, I feel like that totally changed my idea of design, or just like what design can do. You know, it was a book, yeah. It was a talk, it was a series of like educational plans. You can check out Farah's essay in Extra Bold, a feminist, inclusive, anti-racist, non-binary field guide for graphic designers, with authors like Ellen Lupton, Valentina Vergara, Jennifer Tobias, Josh A. Halstead, and more.
Let's talk to Julian now.
Yeah.
Woo!
Part 2, the interview with Julian Glander Co-Glander.
In his words, Julian Glander originally was a baby. Presently, he is a visual artist working in animated GIFs, comics, video games, interactive toys, short films, and illustrations, parentheses, of dogs, close parentheses. In the future, Julian plans to become a ghost.
In Vinnie Newberg's words, he's a star.
He's like a bit of an illustration celeb, especially.
He is, he's such a star.
And to round this out, for the purposes of this show, Julian Glander is a lot of things, but can be best described as a multidisciplinary artist based in Pittsburgh. Julian is the creator of video games like Art School, S-Q-O-O-L, for dear listeners, and author and illustrator of 3D Sweeties. He makes editorial illustrations for publications such as The New Yorker, New York Times, Baffler, Medium, Wired, MIT, and other select clients such as Tinder, St. Vincent, Giphy, Disney, and Claro. His work with Adult Swim includes Jonathan Pillows, an animated short series, Dolphin Poem, a short film. That is a personal favorite of mine.
We're obsessed and with he Dolphin has Film.
Guest animated sequences for The Amazing World of Gumball, and has made shorts for Disney, title cards for Summer Camp Island, and bumpers for MTV.
My gosh, he's done so much.
He has. I love the dolphins thing. I'm going to go watch that as soon as we're done.
It was great seeing you guys.
Oh, no. Okay. Hey, first of all, hey.
Hello.
I'm hey. Basha.
I'm Julian.
Yeah, we saw... Oh, sorry.
No, I was just gonna, you know, I was just kind of babbling. I was gonna say thanks for having me.
No, I'm always down
thanks
to be thanked.
Thanks for coming
no.
on.
Yeah. Yeah, well, full disclosure, we actually saw you talk at Pratt like a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. Hold on. 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Memorial Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Disaster talk.
It wasn't.
I don't think it was.
Absolutely okay. not.
Cool.
No, and then we said, hey, outside for a little, yeah. and then you rode away.
I remember you guys.
That's us.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, we're back. Hey.
Wow, great to see you again.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks for reaching out. That was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love the podcast.
I'm
I
so
love
glad.
The subject matter of each episode is so juicy.
Yeah, we cut out a lot. It's, like, usually way juicier yeah. in the first
really?
Draft. Really? Yeah, because we say yeah. names.
Oh my
god.
Let's
pick out all the names.
Okay.
We'll get to the haters.
Let's officially
so let's start. Really start now.
Let's
all
start.
Right.
Okay, hey. Yeah, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks well, for Olive. Having me.
Yeah. Okay, so Olive, I'll let you take it away.
All right, so our first question, starting out in illustration, what was your first job, gig, etc.? Like, what was your first big project?
So I started out on threadless.com in the 2000s, which was like a t-shirt design site. And you guys might even be too young to remember this because I was in high
we're
school.
We're not.
Oh, we were
okay.
Threadless.
Yeah.
Okay, you know Threadless. So I started out at 14 or 15 submitting t-shirt designs to Threadless. And at the time it was this like competition thing where everyone in the community would vote on all the designs that got submitted. And once a week they would print 7 of them or 5 of them or whatever and sell them as t-shirts. And from that, I think I sold 5 or 6 designs to them when I was in high school. And from that, I got my first illustration gig when I was 17 for Chili's. the restaurant. I got hooked up with an ad agency who found me on Threadless, and they were doing the t-shirt designs for the waiters and waitresses at Chili's. So that was like my first entree. And I was doing that obviously while I was finishing high school. And so I would have to like, I had this whole thing set up where I could go to the library to take calls with these people. And like, for a little while I was pretending like I was an adult. And then finally I was like, by the way, I'm 17. I've never done anything like this before. I don't know if it's even legal for you guys to pay me. And then when I did that, they were like, they flipped and they were like really nice. They walked me through everything. They walked me through like what a creative brief is, how to send an invoice, how to do a pitch deck, all this stuff, da da da. Amazing experience. And then I went to Chili's and they were wearing the shirt and none of my friends believed me that I had designed it. So I think I would say that was project one. Yeah.
So that's my favorite origin story ever.
Oh my God, that's a great one.
Yeah,
it's kind of crazy to think about now. Like, it's crazy to think about how much the world has changed. And it was definitely, this would have been 2007, and it was kind of a special moment where t-shirts were this, graphic t-shirts were this hot thing that people were interested in, and illustration was transitioning from being an offline thing to an online thing. And just, I happened to be on the right website at the right moment to get that project. And it was, I guess I can probably say this, they paid me like $4,000, which, you know, this is pre-recession, a lot of money was being spent on this advertising stuff. And I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna do this forever. This is so much better than mowing lawns or being a lifeguard, da da da. And then I started college the next year and the economy fell apart and basically everything changed after that.
Yeah, I feel like we're in round two a little bit.
I just fucking figured out how the world works, you know? I spent 10 years figuring out how I could fit into the, you know, Earth. And then as soon as I felt like I had like a little bit of a handle on it, it all just gets reset. But that's, you know, that's what's cool about it. You know, it's like we're in like a, it's not that we're in a simulation, but it's like we're in this game where anytime you figure something out or anytime you get to a level you want to be, you just unlock a whole new set of challenges and bad things happening to you.
That's true.
Yeah.
Life, and I'm, you know, like life is a highway, like life is a video game.
Life is, wait, the theme is baseball?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, okay.
It's like based
that's
on
okay.
some clips.
Yeah.
It's what?
It's based on a couple clips. I'm a baseball
okay.
head, which is like not,
like Mr.
Typical.
Met.
Yeah, like Mr. Met.
He's a baseball head.
Yeah. Oh, yuck, yuck. But I was like, I was like, baseball is like the same thing as graphic design and illustration. I can
it's
prove
so,
it.
I'm like so not a sports person. And even mm-hmm. so, it's so hard not to just put a sports metaphor on everything.
Yeah.
It just is such an easy solution to explaining things.
Yeah. Well, there's like, maybe there's a specific set of rules and like worlds in which things operate without like other factors coming in. All texted me that, like I sent over the first draft of the first part of this and all was like, I think we just like wrote Air Bud. Like,
yeah,
like we're just like, wrote. We're just
Air Bud seventh
about-
inning fetch.
I actually Any asked, I was them? Like, did they do a baseball one?
Yeah, it was Air Bud, then Air Bud Golden Receiver, seventh inning fetch.
There were a few.
World Pup, which is soccer. And then I think they did Space Buddies, which was like, that was when they, no, Space
no,
Buddies was
not
they,
like
the
space
sons of Air Bud, sons and daughters of Air Bud went to space.
Second gen.
Outside the franchise.
Yeah, I think that was like, they kind of took it a little too far outside
yeah.
the, yeah.
Was there no hockey?
Oh, there must have been, right?
I thought there was a hockey.
I'm going to look it up for you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, well, you're doing that. You can maybe you could listen to me ask like a related
there's not, but
question.
There's this. There's another.
Oh,
no. No, let's stay on this. There's Most Valuable Primate. Do you guys remember that one?
No way. No.
It's a chimp that plays hockey, and this I think this predates
oh,
Airbud, actually.
Maybe that is really familiar, but Did you feel like getting into the like scene, big quotes, big capital S, was different than talking to Chili's? Like, I guess, do you want to describe like your entry into like
the scene.
Scene? Yeah.
The illustration scene specifically?
Or art scene.
Yeah. I was working for a long time before I really met any other illustrators. Like, I went to school for creative writing and I ended up getting a degree in communications, and like nobody that I went to school with is doing illustration, animation, any of this stuff. And I wasn't either. You know, I was kind of doing computer drawings for fun and working on a lot of different things. And I think I started getting jobs really through like Tumblr and through Tumblr when it was like in its prime. And I like didn't meet anyone or didn't really even talk to anyone that was doing illustration until I had been doing it for a long time. But I wonder if that's like normal. Like, cause there's obviously this whole like industrial complex around SVA, Pratt, RISD, and a couple other schools where like there's like a pipeline where you're the best at AP art, and then you go and you do the best in these schools and one of your teachers puts you in touch with the guy from the New York Times and you graduate and you're like killing it. And I wonder like how that was not my experience at all, you know, and I didn't even know about that stuff until I was like 26 probably.
Well, I just want to say we're part of the pipeline.
No, I know.
Obviously. Yeah, but like I wasn't given like a New York Times art director's contact information. Like
the problem with the pipeline is it promises people a lot of things that they can't possibly actualize.
For sure. But it does work for some people. I think the pipeline is a little deceiving, and I think it depends on who you are.
I'll say that I think it's really fucking stupid.
Yeah.
And I don't think it makes the best artist at all. But I think everyone agrees on that. I mean, I think anyone, even the people who really benefit from it, know that it's broken.
Yeah.
And that this whole $200 awards entry thing is like the stupidest scam ever.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is maybe one of the good things that's going to come out of the pandemic is just people are more willing to say what's bullshit, you know, and are more willing to not pretend that. Yeah, I just like, you know, I've done all that stuff. I've done like the award stuff, American Illustration Society of Illustrators, Young Guns. And it's like it's so stupid. And you go there and everyone's so pompous. I don't have anything positive or constructive to say about it.
I don't think you really do either. Yeah.
To reset it a little bit, to actually answer your question, I, as opposed to coming in through like an apprenticeship or through school, I came into the world of illustration through the internet. And so I have this really kind of like democratic utopian idea that like everyone has a computer and everyone can get on and put their art out there. And then there are all these things working together. If the system was working perfectly, the best art would get put in front of everyone. And all of this kind of like side dealing or whatever would not be a factor. And like, there's even been times when like, I really felt like that was working. You know, I think a lot of these different platforms have had kind of special golden eras. Tumblr certainly had one from maybe 2013 to 2015. I think Instagram had one. And now I'm really into TikTok because I think it's doing the same thing where it's just like, there's this sense of like swirling chaos where there's no kind of institution set up to decide what's good and bad. And it's just pure insanity.
It's like Tumblr part two, because there's so many niches on it that you can get into. And like you said, it's like swirling chaos of just whatever you like in your niche.
Yeah, I just go on it for like hours every day. But I don't even know how to like, I don't know how to make that work professionally. I'm not sure it's possible for an illustrator to even thrive on TikTok, you know?
Yeah,
there's go ahead.
Oh yeah, we both use it, and it's kind of, the algorithm definitely is a little like weird, and sometimes things just randomly blow up and you kind of don't have much control over what gets popular or not. It's similar to like Instagram in that way, I find.
There's this like hot artist type that is on TikTok that's like, all their videos are kind of like them being hot with like the drawing happening somewhere in the frame. And of course they're like, they're making the worst fucking art you can imagine. Like they're just making really bad art and it's blowing up.
That's camp.
That is camp. And I'm here for it.
Yeah.
I don't even care. Whatever works, you know, whatever it takes to get your shit going.
Absolutely.
I'll tell a story about something I did on Tumblr that I've never talked about. And it's kind of weird, actually. I'm looking back and it's like really cringe. But on Tumblr, to create some context, in the early 2010s, Tumblr was the big place for illustration. It was where people's careers were being forged. And the Tumblr radar was a big deal to be on because it meant everyone saw your work. And it's where art directors would go to look for people. And on Tumblr, you could follow up to 200 people a day. And it didn't show how many people you were following. And so every day I would go to another illustrator's page and follow 200 people that had reblogged them. And then X number would follow me back, probably about 25 a day would follow me back. And I would do that every single day. I would open up 200 tabs and my computer would get all hot from doing that. And I would follow. And then when it got to, when you were following 5,000 people, you couldn't follow anymore. And so I wrote a macro to unfollow everyone that I was following. And so that was actually my hustle that got my illustration career going and got 10,000 followers on Tumblr. And it's like horrible. And I'm not sure it even did anything for me. And I think like looking back, it was a huge waste of time. And I was kind of just looking for some sort of repetitive activity to do to make myself feel like I was working my career.
Do you ever watch, like, in middle school health, The Secret? Do you know about The Secret?
They showed you that in middle school health?
Yeah.
With manifesting.
New York public schools.
That's so fucked up.
It was weird. They were like, this works.
I think this is huge now, obviously.
Everyone, I don't think manifests. I told anyone that. That's a.
They showed you that in school, and then they quiz you on it.
Catholic school.
So true. It's just about like manifesting things you want. Like if you put like the kind, like I guess explanation would be if you like work towards something and like put a certain like energy about that into the universe, it'll come to you. Like that, and it was like it was all pseudoscience-y, but I just wanted to say that kind of felt like that for me, because you were like, I don't know, you were like, okay, I want like an illustration career, so I'm gonna do this thing, which like I don't know if it worked, but like maybe you were putting like vibes into the universe.
Yes, it was more... very ritualistic. There was something also something satanic about it. Yes.
Tumblr for sure.
Yeah, Tumblr's kind of
I think the whole manifesting thing, it kind of works, but it doesn't work enough that it's actually worth thinking about. Like the basic principle of it, of if you focus your energy on something, your life will move in that direction, is absolutely true. But that's only going to get you about 15% of the way that you need to get, you know, like if you want to be let's say you want to be an illustrator, of course you should be thinking about being an illustrator and you should be making decisions that are guided by that. But they really lose me with like the crystals and stuff, and the anything energy related, I'm just really turned off by.
Oh, of course. I mean, don't watch The Secret if you're like somehow moved to watch The Secret by this.
But I have read it actually, and I've been in places in my life where I've been really lost and confused, and I've gotten into all kinds of different fucking stuff. Like I got really into Myers-Briggs. And then from there, I got into the Enneagram, which is like so, it's just like the next level of just like reading something that you want to hear, you know, of being told what you want to hear and thinking that you are somehow growing or learning or facing a hard truth, which is like so much of what's on the internet is like, is being told what you want to hear but it's presented as like tough love.
Yeah, I guess let me just loop back to this, the secret. Just, I mean, you, basically you wanted to be an illustrator. So at the time you did something that maybe worked, maybe didn't, but like, you know, there, you can believe whatever you want about energy, but I think a lot of why people like the secret, it's like, it's saying that you, the actions you do, like working towards your goals, like do work. Like it's kind
but,
of,
I mean, that's true.
Yeah. So
but that whole, that message fits on a fortune.
Yeah.
Cookie.
Yeah.
It doesn't course. Really like, it need to be my... a whole lifestyle.
Yeah. I didn't mean to be like, yeah, you probably love the secret because you unfollowed mad people on Tumblr.
There's something, I mean, it's all this stuff is everyone has some sort of belief system or superstition or something. Cause how else would you get through the world? You know, of course. And I think the core, and I don't even, I know there's people that are going to listen to this that love the secret. And I'm, in some levels, I'm jealous of anyone who can get into it because it's great to have a belief system and you can do, you can be an astrology person or a Hogwarts house person or a fucking whatever in a way that's not toxic and doesn't ruin your life. Or you can go too far with it as I have done with many things, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Well, no, I don't, but I'll trust you. But yeah, that this is all to say you were like working towards your goal. Who knew if it worked or not?
And
I
so
just
I
wanted
did
to give you a little
it.
Credit. Yeah. Let me pivot here. What, when you started your career, were you most afraid of professionally? / what are you most afraid of now professionally?
I would say I've had a big rejection problem my whole career. And I'm really, even now, I'm really hesitant to ask for things. And I'll do crazy things to get out of asking for things. I really hate to pitch. I really hate to do cold reach outs. But it's something you have to do, you know? And I would say that's like I can think of a million times when like, I let something go or I mess something up because I was too shy to follow up or too scared of looking like I didn't know something, you know? I'm trying to think of like a great example. Okay, like I was just thinking about this. When I first moved to New York, I was playing in a band and it was like, it didn't really go great. It was like, one of the big reasons it didn't work out is because I knew that the music I was making was not good. And so I started band with my friends. We played a couple shows and then I was focused on some other things. And I used to go to all these different venues in New York that aren't open anymore. 285, Kent, Glasslands. You may remember this era. I was at Silent Barn and I ran into Laura Lee Rodriguez, who was on her way to becoming Empress of. And she was like, hey, I'd met her a few times. She was like, hey, are you doing any more music? And I was like, no, it's not really working for me. I'm gonna do some other stuff. And she was like, no, I thought it was really cool. I like that guitar sound on one of your songs, because we both like the Cocteau Twins. And she was like, do you wanna do a session together? And I was like, oh, you know, I'll think about it maybe. And then I never followed up with her on that. And that is like I went home and I was like, she was just saying that to be nice. She doesn't want to do a session with me. Like, I don't even know how to play the guitar. I have my guitar tuned to an open chord with four strings on it, like fucking Otis Redding, because I don't know how to play it. And so I never followed up with her on that. And of course she became this big star. And everyone already knew at the time that she was like an amazing genius songwriter, producer. And so I kick myself all the time that I didn't just like go over to her house and shoot the shit. Like, not that it would have changed my career, but just like, because then I didn't learn anything from her, you know? And because I was in such a spiral of already hating myself for being a bad musician, that when I got the chance to become a better musician, I pushed it away instead of going towards it. But that's before my illustration career took off, I was doing that over and over again. You know, I was like pushing things away or self-sabotaging or I don't know, just like not getting out of my comfort zone.
Yeah, that's a tough one. But yeah,
I also have no, I have no advice because I make the same mistakes every day that I've been making, you know, obviously less and less as time goes on, I hope, but it's like, anytime I take a step back and look at it, I am just making the same core mistakes over and over.
Yeah, I think what matters is, you know, like a little bit less each time, I feel like.
Micro amounts less. I would say I'm like, I am probably 5% wiser and smarter than I was at the beginning. But that's, you know, that could be 6% eventually. That could be, we could be looking at 6.5 by the end of my career.
Oh, we're all about accruing interest, even in small amounts here. I mean, that's definitely, I think, a little refreshing to hear, because you're like someone who a lot of people are like, I mean, you're an illustration household name, Julian Glander.
Wow, so, fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like a household illustration name. Like, a lot of people know you. Like, you are someone who I would say is successful, even. So it's like refreshing to hear your honesty about, I don't know, just like struggling with like it hurts and feels bad to be rejected, so I don't email people who I think are going to reject me, etc.
Yeah, I'll tell a twisted story about something I did. I was on the Straight Ahead Animation podcast a couple weeks ago, and I told the same story. But basically, when I started doing comics, this guy from Fantagraphics like sent me a nice message on Instagram and was like, "Hey, we'd love to work together sometime." And so then when I wanted to do a book, I didn't email him. I made an Instagram story post that said, "I have 200 pages of comics. Would anyone want to put out a book?" And then I waited until I thought he was online and I posted it to my story. And that's how I got my book deal with Fantagraphics. And like, I don't think I even consciously was thinking about it, but I think like if I would have had to put together a pitch and send it out, I would have like died, you know? And part of that is because of my own stuff that's going on with me. And part of that is because in the world of being a creative person, there's a lot of traps you can fall into with people who want to waste your time, people who want free pitches or free stuff without, you know, because the easiest thing to say, if you're a publisher or a animation development person, the easiest thing to say is, "Hey, pitch me something." Because it takes me 3 weeks to do it and it takes them 45 minutes to listen to it, you know? So there's a balance here of this weariness. And then you also, you know, to do a creative project, you have to be generous with your time and with your work. And you have to find people that you're okay being generous with, you know, people that you trust and that you think it's worth collaborating with.
Yeah. I'm just a quick comment. I'm not like hearing that story. That makes sense that you like came out of like New York DIY. Cause I feel like a lot of myself included, a lot of people do like post like the sly Instagram story or something.
Really? You think it's a New York DIY thing? It's almost like a career thirst trap.
It is.
Yeah. Actually, we have like 5 minutes left on this one, so maybe this will be the next one, and then after this one we can pivot to our next segment of it.
Sorry, we have free Zoom.
Yeah.
I love it.
All right. So do you feel like you've made it? Do you feel successful after talking about all that?
When you said I was a household name, I did feel successful for about 20 seconds. So I'll have little bursts like that, you know? I think when I look at it all on paper, I definitely can acknowledge that I've had a really blessed career and I've been really lucky. And if they made illustration illegal or for some reason I had to retire tomorrow, I think I could be okay with it. I think like I'm really happy with the things I've gotten to do and the places I've gotten to go. But at the same time, you're rarely going to ever meet anyone who feels like they're successful, because that's part of what motivates people to keep going is just looking at all the other things that you have left to do. I don't know. Am I successful? I'm verified on Instagram. I feel like that's like, I thought when I got verified that I was just going to be like, I wouldn't need any more validation after that. You know, I thought there was maybe a couple things out there that I just needed to literally check off. And then I'd be like mentally well adjusted. Obviously everyone on earth knows this is not true. We all live on something called the hedonic treadmill, where anytime you accomplish something, the treadmill just starts going faster, you know? So I don't even have anything new to add to that, like, line of thinking, or I also don't have any advice. Because one thing that really bugs me is people who are a little too proud of themselves. And that may just be my Midwestern upbringing.
To circle it back to one of your points before, life is like a video game. Like, it's all like the ebbs and flows and getting to the next level. And
that's really true.
Things.
What game, what video game is most like that, though?
I don't know.
Like, what would you say is the game that is most similar to life, or the most apt metaphor?
I only play Pokemon.
It's in a lot of ways mystery, it is like Pokemon. Dungeon. Well, Pokemon, it's sort of like dungeon. You have to catch them all, and then what? Well, then there's more.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I like the mystery where you are the Pokemon, and it's
what's mystery just like dungeon? I don't know about this.
Oh, you get to be the Pokemon in it, and you just like run around in dungeons and fight other Pokemon, and you literally just go up levels in these dungeons and get to more and more and more, and you're just wandering through. They're like mazes.
That's not appealing to me at all.
See, I like it because I get to be the Pokemon.
I've never thought about being a Pokemon. That's so weird. Like, I've thought about being a Pokemon trainer a lot. Mm. I pretended my cat was a Pokemon. I'd walk around the neighborhood with a Old Navy tech vest and a Pokeball like I was Ash Ketchum. But I'd never thought about being a Pokemon. I don't know what that says about either of us, though.
I'm team never thought about being a Pokemon.
I think it would be a hard life. The world of Pokemon is so abusive and toxic in some ways. That's kind of how I want to end it.
Okay, cool.
Let's see. You take like a little quiz in the beginning, and it gives you which Pokemon you are.
Oh, I love
like that. And it made you like touch the screen with your stylus, and it was like, your aura is like green, and then it'd be like your Chikorita, and I was like, yes.
Oh, did you know?
What I want to be. I mean, sometimes I would.
You would just start over.
And try to get the answers that I would make me get the Pokemon that I wanted. So.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to try to extract a metaphor out of this in less than a minute. Because in life, you can restart if you don't have the start you want. In illustration, you can fucking delete your website and come back with a whole new style in a year and no one's going to know. No matter what level you're at, no matter what you've done, you can just do a reset anytime you want. And I love that. And I did a lot of resets as I was trying to get started. I tried a lot of different things before I got the kind of Glander Co. thing.
Yeah, I think that's true. I had one professor at Pratt who would be like, there's some illustrators who reinvent themselves every year, like new style, and it works. And they
it's
do
so
it.
So exhausting.
It's fine. And yeah, I'm like, that's.
But the style of having a new style all the time is obviously its own style, you know? And people who are anti-style, maybe this isn't an argument people have anymore, but there was this whole big style versus no style thing. But anti-style is also a style, you know? Okay, I'm gonna try to be more positive in the second half of this Zoom.
Okay.
You know, post-pandemic, really been thinking about this stuff a lot. Mm-hmm. Haven't really talked to anyone about it in a while.
Okay. Yeah, if you're listening to this right now, you can tell we have free Zoom. So we're in the second part. So, pivoting completely.
I'm getting whiplash. We're pivoting a lot.
I know. We have so many pivots. Well, we have a lot of questions to ask you.
I could do 10 sessions of this. This is amazing to me. I didn't realize how much I loved talking until the pandemic, and I had no one to talk to for a year.
Yeah,
so this is great. I could go on this podcast every day. We could make this a morning thing.
We're very affirming, too. That doesn't hurt.
No, it's
like,
great.
You're really successful.
More.
Yeah. Okay. So you have a very multidisciplinary practice that kind of borders on fine art, animation, sound design, graphic design, illustration, 3D modeling, computer graphics, excuse me, etc. You want to just talk about how that all fits together?
How it all fits together?
I don't know. I kind of wanted to leave it open-ended. Do you feel like, did everything just come together really easily and you were just like, of course, like this all these things I do separately, like they totally work, or did they one thing lead to another? Like, how'd you end up where you are, I guess, doing so many things?
Doing all these different projects. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just, part of it is just my personality type of just wanting to do, of just being interested in different formats. When I was in school, I was studying creative writing. I was really into like Dave Eggers and McSweeney's. And I really loved how they would put out these books. They put out I guess it was a quarterly, literary quarterly, every 3 months. And it was different each time. Like one of the books was like, you know, it would be 3 feet long and 1 inch tall. And one of them was a giant head that was full of different little novellas in it. And then I did an internship at Dave Eggers's nonprofit, A26. And I got really into this sort of like postmodern literature, playing with form and format stuff. And I kind of started seeing like the internet as the ultimate place for that. Like just a place where you could do all these different kinds of projects and always be like playing with boundaries and stuff. And like, I think like someone could look at my work and be like, oh, it's the Glanderco style. He's doing fucking pink blobs again. But to me, it's like the pink blob stuff, the colors and the compositions and stuff is like a language or a key that allows me to like easily test out different formats, which is what I'm actually interested in. You know, like taking the Glanderco style and worldview and doing a video game and then doing a picture book and then testing it out with a board game and a toy and all this stuff. And part of it is just like, well, it, you know, originally I was doing all this stuff separately. I didn't know what my career was going to be. I didn't know if I was even going to have a career or if I was just messing around until I got a job. And it's just like, it's been hard for me to give it up because I want to have a buffet style experience of life. And there's not, I haven't found one thing that I want to do over and over. Like sometimes I'll think like, I always say like the best job in American history or in the history of the world would be like a newspaper cartoonist in the 20th century, like doing Garfield or Peanuts or something, like waking up in the morning, doing like 3 drawings and 1 joke and like doing that every day for your entire life. Like on one level, I feel like that's the best thing you could possibly have. And then another level, I don't think I could do it. Like, I don't think I could handle that level of stability and security.
Yeah, well, that's, I like don't know if I've ever heard somebody talk about like style as like a lens to just do whatever you want before. But I really love that because especially at art school, they're like, you're gonna have one style and you're gonna do one thing. You know, they don't like talk about like using style as like a lens to do whatever the hell you want. And I think that's freaking awesome.
Yeah, I mean, part of that is because these people who are teaching at these schools don't know, you know, they don't know everything. They know their own experiences. And part of it is they grew up in a different world than we live in now. Because it's probably true that 30 years ago, there couldn't be a business like this. And even when I was like, when I was getting out of school, I had a really hard time finding like role models because I had this feeling of what I wanted to do. I wanted to be like Spike Jonze or something where he's always doing different stuff. And it's, and you kind of hear about it and you're like, oh, that actually does make sense. It's not what you'd expect, but it makes sense. But yeah, I think like my advice would be like, if you have a teacher that tells you something, especially if it's really didactic and it's something you don't want to hear, just like, don't hear it. Just like, don't listen, you know, like
did exactly that.
Don't listen to anything, especially like a bigger lesson is like, be really careful about who you're even taking advice from. Because if you don't want to become this person, then their advice is useless, you know? Or if you don't see yourself in them in some way or see their path as something that you want to go down, then the advice is just garbage. Because I based the beginning of my career on something that a fucking high school guidance counselor told me. And what does he know? You know? Like, what does he know about what I want? What does he know about how the world is? Over and over, I would have people growing up telling me like, oh, well, that's not where the money is. You know, you don't want to be an artist. You don't want to be, you want to work in advertising because you can smoke weed and write a little comedy sketch and that's your whole job, you know. I now I'm getting really worked up because I just, I think it's so disappointing that you have all these professors and teachers and mentors who don't take their responsibility seriously to inspire kids and to get the best out of kids and to give them advice that is going to actually apply in the world.
Yeah, side story. I don't even think you know this, but I think I learned that lesson from Olive very early on. We met in color theory class on the second day of college, and we had this like real older, not so like guy professor who was just like yelling and like he
grabbing paintbrushes out of your hands. Right. Like it was
just like not cool, and it was just like trying to, we're gonna break you, it's art school. Like,
oh my god, what the hell? This person needs to go to therapy.
Yeah,
they don't need to be taking this out on a bunch of kids.
No, but I was so like I did pretty badly in that class. I was just like, this is so dumb, like why are you yelling, like I don't even understand what you were saying. He would like speak in riddles, it was bad.
But his emails were even worse.
Yeah, we'd roll up, it's like 9:30, and then he'd talk, like he would just talk for 30 minutes, and then like he'd like say the prompt at the end for whatever we were doing for the next 6 hours. And I was like one day I sat next to Olive and I was just like, this is beginning in our friendship like many years ago. So I was like, I wasn't sure about all. I was like, I'm just sitting next to this person, but I was like, hey, did you like get any of that? I didn't really hear the assignment. And Olive's just like, no, I completely tune it out. Olive is like the king of tuning things out.
That's such a great feeling though, that's such a great meet cute, first of all. But thank like you. The feeling of like when you realize that someone's full of shit and that someone else sees it is so important. Like, because you realize it's also hard when you're starting out, you have all these crazy personalities, you have these people that are so different from your teachers in high school that it's hard not to just be in awe of them. And I certainly did this in college. I took everything that some of my professors said as gospel, and they were like crazy old bats, you know? That's great.
Yeah, we learned something from you, Olive.
Yeah, there's this one in particular that I was thinking of in the upper level illustration department at Pratt that everybody thought was God himself walking down that hallway. And I remember I had him my sophomore year, and I was like, doesn't sound like you're advertising like good things like about illustration. Doesn't seem like you're really trying to help anybody out or really care. And everybody's just like, oh, he's amazing. Like, I don't know, I took his class, wasn't really about it. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that's a hard thing to go through, because it's like when you realize that all these people who have been like put on a pedestal or made into like heroes, like when you realize that there's nothing special about them, it can at first be a really heartbreaking feeling, you know, to know that there aren't any heroes out there and there's nobody who's like gifted from God at being an illustrator. And then that's actually the best feeling, you know, when you can come around to it and realize like, there's nothing special about any of these people. This is a job that you can do. This is something that you can put your heart into and make a career out of. And nobody, it's scary that nobody can tell you what the rules are, but it's also like the best thing ever. It's like, isn't that why it's the best job ever? Because there's no rules and the only rule is whatever works, works. So yeah, I think the whole, I don't even want to talk about schools anymore. I just think they have so many problems, and it's such a bummer to see like people's enthusiasm get broken when that should be a time when you leave and you've had the best time of your life and you're more enthusiastic than ever.
Yeah, let's stay negative for a sec here. Oh wait, sorry. Al, did you have a comment?
I was just gonna say something we talk about a lot is realizing that everybody is just people, and we're all in this career together, and we're all doing completely different things all the time.
Yeah, I don't know. I think like so much of this stuff is like, it's so obvious that no one should ever have to say it. But you do have to kind of remind yourself again and again, this person that I'm working with, this art director, client, producer, vendor, whoever, is a human being. And we have to do this together. And I always feel this way that, you know, learning how to make images and art is really not hard. And the hard part is people stuff, because every person, you guys are infinitely complicated, and every person that you work with is infinitely complicated. And when I think about projects of mine that went really badly, it's not because of the art or because of the brief or the, you know, brand. It's because of like either my ego or the other person's ego, or just like a communication problem, you know, like, but again, that's like, that's what's cool about it. Because when you finish a great project with someone, you haven't just made work, but you've bonded with someone and connected with someone. And then it goes out in the world and it connects with more people. And that's like the only point of it, you know?
Yeah, which can definitely be hard to remember.
Yeah.
That was really nice. I'm going to...
Yeah, that was great.
Totally shift a little and go back to something we were talking about a minute ago. Do you feel like you have haters?
You know what? Yes, I obviously do have haters. I don't get like a lot of hate messages. I know that some artists get like harassment. Every once in a while, I'll like name search myself on Twitter, which I don't need to be doing. There was this guy a couple months ago who like, he said he wanted to beat me up on Twitter. Like he was like, I hate this art style. It's so corporate and disingenuous. I want to punch this guy in the face. And I just responded with a frowny face, and he messaged me and was like, hey, I didn't know you were going to see that. I'm really sorry. I actually love your video game. Like da da da. It's like, you know, people just run their mouths. Like, I don't feel like persecuted. I don't feel like I'm doing it for the haters, or like that they're like, there's not like haters in my mind all the time. Part of that is because illustration is like a positive community, almost to the point of being toxic sometimes. You know, people generally, it's like we're sharing our work online, and in our little online bubbles, we're talking to other artists or people who are truly deeply fans of art. And so there's not a sense of like, oh, this illustrator sucks, in the same way that like you would say Justin Bieber sucks or something. You know, it's so low stakes that I don't think there's that much hatage going on. I think it's fine to be a hater. I certainly think I hate in silence a lot. You know, there's not that many, but there's some people in the greater design community that really bother me, you know? And I'll have private conversations about like, this person kind of sucks, but it's not that kind of community, you know? It's not a confrontational, bullying, rap battling community. It's like, everyone is really trying to work together. And I think like having bounced around a lot of other communities, it's one of the things I love the most about illustration. Because when I put out a video game, I actually do get insane messages and insane reviews on Steam and tweets and, you know, stuff that's like really annoying, because it's like video, it's like 16-year-old video game consumers, as opposed to like my peers.
One thing Josh and I talk a lot about is the use of the word cute to describe work. Do you have any like experience with that? Like any thoughts? Like we also, you know, drawing lighter hearted things, being told that we are not serious. Do you have any like experience with that? Thoughts on that?
Yeah. So my work is cute, obviously. I've gotten all the usual words put on it: whimsical, bubbly, candy coated. It's fine. It is cute. What I see a lot is people using that language to like demean or like cut down specifically women artists and artists maybe from other cultures, you know? Like, I think a lot of times like there's this kind of person that thinks cute things are not serious. I don't care about it at all. I don't care what those people have to say. Like, I don't really care. I don't even think my work is that cute, but I do like looking at it. And I don't know why you would make something that you didn't like looking at. I do have one story, and I won't name a name, but I think it was really weird. And I think about it a lot. I got linked up with this record label, and I was doing something for this hip hop producer. who's pretty famous. You would know who he was. But he was, we had been going back and forth, and like, it was really hard to get in touch with him. I was sending him stuff via text message because his person was like, he won't respond to emails. He won't look at emails. You have to text him. So anyway, I was sending stuff back and forth with him. He finally calls me and he's like, hey man, I really like the stuff you're sending over, but it's kind of gay. Like, can you do something that's not so gay? And I was like, so I totally fucked up and didn't respond correctly in the moment. I was like, what do you mean? How is it gay? And he was like, you know, cause it's like pink and it's got like big eyes and stuff. Like, can you kind of do the same thing, but not gay? And I was like, no, I don't know. I don't think I don't think it's going to work.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
But now I'm ready. Wow. If someone now told me that my work, if a client said that my work was too gay, I would be ready to respond to that. You know, now that it's happened once.
What would you say?
I'd say, I totally don't think that's an appropriate way to, first of all, it's, you know, it's really a demeaning thing to say, and it's not an appropriate thing to say about someone's art style. And I wish you would have used a different word or, you know, chosen a different way to express that. Cause now I just fucking hate your guts.
That was good. I'm taking note on that in case that ever happens. I think the cute thing maybe for me and Olive means something different because we're like not cis men.
No, I'm grappling with this all the time where it's like, am I benefiting from people taking my work seriously just by being a white man? And I think it's obviously true. You know, I think it's clear when you read design blogs or just general comments on the internet, it's obviously true. And it's like, I don't know, it pisses me off. I don't know. It's like totally, I'm drawn to cute things. I love toys. I love that stuff. And I wish people could just be more in touch with what they think is beautiful and what pleases them. Because obviously if someone's getting mad that something's cute, they have something else going on with them, you know? That's not really fair to project onto an artist or, right? Cause I know what you mean. Whereas like, if someone says that your work is cute, there's a backhandedness to it sometimes.
I totally go nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like it implies like a lack of seriousness.
Exactly. And it's also the kind of thing that's a microaggression, because then if you were to push it, they'd say, no, I don't think that's a bad thing at all. You know, but there's a tone there or there's a lot of things that they're not saying. And I also think when people say something's cute, they're not engaging with it on a deep enough level. So Q Dork gave this talk a few years ago about this, specifically about cuteness and about how she basically talks about how she wants to use cuteness to disarm people. Because while people are looking at something and thinking that it's not serious and thinking that they're not even engaged with it, you can slip a lot of other content in there, and you can slip messaging in there that someone might not be receptive to if they had their guard up. There are things that only cute design can do, you know, and there are things that cuteness can do that nothing else can do. And the most popular things in the world are cute. Pokemon is cute and everyone loves it. Mickey Mouse is cute. It's never bothered me that much, but now it is bothering me. But, you know, people with the anti-cute agenda need to just, you know, everyone needs to go to therapy, but that, you know, so do that.
Yeah, we'll just keep on the hater topic for one more question. Was it ever difficult to stay true to your own vision in a time of struggle? Let's say there was a month where you had to pay your rent and like didn't have it and had to take on like a weird job.
Oh yeah, I took on a lot of really weird stuff. I would just go on Craigslist and find any design job, you know, doing little stuff like, oh, there's like a little law firm that needs a word changed on their letterhead and nobody knows how to use a PDF. And, or I would do, you know, a friend of a friend would need like a logo for their dog walking company or like, yeah. And as I was starting my career, I saw myself more as a graphic designer, problem solver, someone who was going to come in and objectively figure out the best approach for every single project. And it's like a lot of the design teaching at the time was that you're not supposed to have your own identity as a creative person, you know, that you're supposed to somehow come into every project as a blank slate with no perspective and just do quote unquote the best, you know, get the best result as if that's like a mathematically, theoretically provable thing. But yeah, I would say like everyone has to get their money sorted out. Everyone has to do whatever they have to do to pay rent. There's no shame in that. And you don't have to put everything on your identity that you've ever done, you know? And I actually think a lot of the artists that I really admire who have been working for a long time and made like work that's changed my life have jobs, you know, they work at coffee shops or at bookstores or whatever. And that's something that's totally separate from their artistic career. And I think that's a great way to go. I don't think making a living on your artwork necessarily makes you a great artist or not. And like, again, it's like whatever works, because a lot of people really like that, having a solid schedule, having a steady income, and not having their work tied to money at all. And that's like, I mean, that's like, I can't really picture that for myself. I'm so tangled up in it at this point that it would be hard for me to even separate what I'm doing from like the money stuff. But it's like, there's a million billion people in the world, and there's a million billion different ways to live your life and do it.
I'm gonna go off script here because this was like a question that came up for me while you're talking. When do you feel like you could largely start doing most of your work in your own voice versus like something from a place of like neutrality or having to fit someone else's?
Yeah, I think it was a gradual thing. It took probably 5 years to get there and to get to the place where like everything that I was doing was something that had my name on it and something that I could put out. I don't know. I don't think there was like a moment, but I do think it was a gradient, and it was something that like, it wasn't clear to me at the beginning that that was my goal. You know, it wasn't like, I want to have the Glanderco style and I want to do everything in one style and I want to have my name on it. Like I was looking for inspiration more from at like Sagmeister, who does like design stuff, you know, and some of it is just really boring and some of it looks like anyone could have done it. And like I didn't know about all these other cool artists, so that I didn't even know that that was a possibility, like until quite late in my career.
That's also comforting to hear, I think. Because it's like as people who are trying, like right now I feel like I'm pulling towards like wanting to do things in like my own voice versus like the voice of neutrality, and it sometimes feels like it's like very far away, or like that since I'm not doing that right now I've failed in some way.
Well, I'll say this, I think I was the last person to know that I was doing the Glanderco voice, you know. I think, and this is what any artist who's been doing it for a long time will tell you, is that you can't sit down and make a book for yourself of this is going to be my style, you know, because I did try that too. I was like, I'm going to do I'm going to do the Jeff McFetridge style with my twist on it. And I'm going to do 100 pieces that are these single line weight 2D illustrations in this color palette, and that'll be my style and I'll make a career out of it. And it was obviously a mega failure, you know, because what happens is the style in my experience is something that emerges out of specific shortcuts that you learn to take, specific methods that you find really useful, and specific iconography that's still attractive to you after years and years of messing with it. And you don't know that stuff until you've gone in and done the work. And so for a certain kind of person, I think this is the worst news ever. And for a certain kind of person, it's the best news ever, that the way to get the style is to make 1,000 pieces, you know? And if you love making art and love drawing, then like, congratulations, that's what you get to do now. Like, that's what your assignment is to keep doing it all the time. And you'll look up one day and you'll know, you'll have a rhythm and you'll have a way that you like to do things that works, that also connects with people. But yeah, I was like, I kind of would like to go back and look at some of the stuff I was doing, like, because I was all over the place, you know, it all, and it didn't snap together right away at all. And like, that's what's cool about it. Cause wouldn't it fucking suck to know what you were going to do for the rest of your life? Like, wouldn't it suck if you had everything planned out and you knew how you were going to approach every problem that ever came to you for the rest of your life?
It'd be boring. That's yeah. Like the fun of illustration.
And if you want to, what I'm going to do. If you want to have a boring job, make more money, go work on Wall Street or, you know, at a bank or something. Like, if you want to have a boring job that's stable and comforting, congratulations, that's a great way to live life too, you know, but it would be the wrong reason to get into illustration.
Absolutely. I think we have some final questions. Yeah, just a few rapid fire ones. What do we got? 8 minutes?
Yeah.
Seven? I think the first one is about collaboration and specifically doppelganders, which I recall from your talk.
What's the question?
I don't know. That's all we have written is collaboration doppelganger. So if you'd like to talk about either of those.
Yeah, I'll tell the story of that project because it is a pretty good one.
Please. I think we were eliciting. We were manifesting you to just tell the story.
So I had known for a while that there was another Julian Glander. I had typed my name into Facebook and he had come up and he was in Germany. And I think the first time I ever had heard of him was when I was getting a Facebook in high school. So anyway, flash forward. I'm not sure what made me think of it, but I was name searching myself and I typed in Julian Glander into Facebook and I saw his page and I added him. And I just thought like it would be really cool to do a collaboration with him somehow. Like I don't know what he did. He was a law student at the University of Hanover in Germany. So he spoke German, but we were the same age. And I was going, and I was flipping through his photos, and there was a lot of these like nature photos that were like, you would see them on a calendar, like super saturated, high intensity sunsets, forests, buildings. So I messaged him and I said, did you take these photos? Do you want to collaborate? And I made some little guys in 3D and put them like in the scenes that he had shot. But it was really like, I don't know. It was really sweet. It was sweet to talk to him. And it was really nice to just like connect with a random person that I really had no reason to be connected to other than this chance fact that we're named the same thing. It made me feel again, like, I think the words let's collaborate are like really scary. Like, I think a lot of times it's what artists say to each other as a show of respect or a show of like camaraderie or something. And I've had a lot of moments of let's collaborate that just don't go anywhere. And I think it's like, there's something inspiring about the idea that like you could make art with anyone. You could get inspiration from just any random person on the planet. You could get dropped out of a plane and be forced to make an art project with the next person you saw. And it would turn out in an unexpected way that you wouldn't have done on your own. And just that whole idea of bouncing off people is like another one of the promises of the internet, you know, that you will be linked up with random people based on your interests or based on something, and you will both grow as a result. I don't think he grew at all. I don't think he even liked the project, but what are you going to do?
You never know though.
Yeah.
That's the thing with people from Germany. They're very stoic. You know, he could have thought it was the coolest thing, and he just said, "This is very nice." Period. You know.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to interpret that.
Okay, I just came up with like a randomly big question. You can answer this to the best of your abilities or not. You could just be like, "I don't want to talk about that. I don't even want to think about this world." But what would Glander Co. look like without the internet?
No, I'd be doomed. I'd be doomed. I absolutely would have had, I'm so lucky that I was able to start my career in this time, because I don't know, like growing up, the only artists or creative people I knew were people who did art for fun and had jobs. And as a kid and a teen, what I always thought for my life was that it was going to be, I would get a job that I didn't like. And in that very 90s kind of slackery way, I would spend 8 hours of my day in a cubicle, and then maybe at night I would have some creative outlet. I would be playing the drums or doing cartoons or something. That's not a bad way to live. And I think a lot of people are really happy with that sort of grind and routine. But I just feel so lucky. I feel like I won the lottery. Like, I feel like the fact that I get to wake up and do this or not do it and just take a day off, and that I get to like follow my instincts is like, it's like a miracle. It's like, I don't know. I just want to soak in every second of it, because it's the best feeling. And I hope everyone finds something like that in their life. You know, I hope everyone finds the thing that makes them excited to get up in the morning, and because it's out there for everyone, you know, hopefully.
That's really sweet.
That was wonderful.
You got any parting words?
Back up your files. You have to get the Lazy Rugged and have Time Machine on that. You should also back them up in the cloud. That's my number one advice. And I say that because I'm going through some lost file carnage right now.
Bummer, but very wise words from Julia.
Yeah, that's the big problem in my life.
Yeah.
Files.
I hope you get them found.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on.
Wait, this was really a treat. So yeah, edit out everything that I said.
Okay.
Leave nothing.
For sure.
Cold Email is a very professional podcast about being early career creatives and all the trials, tribulations, and good times that come with it. Recorded, written, and performed by Basha Kurlander and Olive Lagaze. Edited by Basha Kurlander. Follow us on Instagram at cold.email and check out our website, cold-email.tumblr.com. Email us at coldemail1000@gmail.com with any questions you want us to answer on the show, suggestions for future themes, or to inquire about guest starring in an episode. Music by Basha Kurlander, aka Marbly. As always, thanks for listening.
Into the episode.
It's true. I think the interview with Julian will be enough, but I think maybe like compressing that first section.
You can like talk about Airbud or something. Does he have a baseball one? Is there a dog baseball movie?
Oh yeah, of course. There's like, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I thought he was.
I think Airbud has like a lot of baseball ones.
Okay, I was like, wait, did he just do soccer and basketball?
No way. I think he did hockey. I think he's done everything. You know, like hypnotizing someone. I'm like, you will hire me. You will hire me again. Yeah. So that's how I use Instagram now. And then also,
we're like, hey, you're a cool professional peer and you make really good work. You don't need to put that part in. That was kind of very business-like.
We're Olive, we're all business.
All business. We admire your work and would like to have you on our very professional podcast.
Yeah, maybe we should wear suits now.
I don't have a suit. Neither do I.
I barely own pants. Just kidding. I own a lot of pants.
Oh, like professional pants. I have a lot of pants, but they're not like, you know, dress slacks.
I wore a pair to graduation of nice pants.
Same. I don't have those anymore.
Like, did the guys in your high school say that?
Yes, all the time.
Yeah.
I'm channeling my cousin right now with the Yankees win, Yankees win, Yankees win, Yankees win.
Boo Yankees.
Yeah, go Mets. Yay,
Julian Glander. Go Mets. Let's go Mets. Let's go Julian Glander. All right, I'm going to stop.
Me too.